Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, March the 28th, or Saturday, March the 28th, doing a special Saturday podcast to catch up with our friends Michael and Rosine. We normally chat with them about international politics. Today, we're going to take a little different direction. We're going to talk about the situation in New York City with Michael, and we're going to get a little insight or update on what's happening in France. Not a great deal of information that I'm seeing, so we want to hear from Rosine as to what is happening in France and Paris and what is going on over there. Now, if you look at the Drudge Report, and I just happened to look at it about 10 or 15 minutes ago, it's one ugly headline after another, and it doesn't get any uglier than Spain or Italy. Now, we have no idea what's going on in China. I don't believe a word out of the communist government. So whatever they're saying, I have a big question mark under that. I also don't believe what's going on in Iran. So that could be a much bigger case there than we are hearing. But nevertheless, we're going to hear about New York City, and we're going to hear about Rosine, about Paris. So let me say hello to Rosine. How are you, Rosine?
I'm fine. How are you, Silvio? Good evening.
Absolutely delighted to hear your wonderful French accent. You know, we
Thank
love
you.
To hear that. So nice to have you. And Michael, how you been?
Hi, Silvio. I'm doing well. Thank you.
All right. Well, let me just for a brief introduction, I know that there's always new people listening. Just give us an update on what you are doing at this moment or at this time in your lives, Rosine. So bring us up to date, please.
Well, at this moment, everything is very quiet. Every meeting, every campaign, every trip has been canceled. So we have to concentrate on staying home. We are lucky in Tennessee, here in Memphis, we are not confined like Michael must be in New York City. But
right.
This is the way. So we keep in touch very, very closely with overseas friends.
Right. Well, that's right. And thanks to social media, you know, we can learn a great deal about what's happening elsewhere. Michael, what's the latest with you? What are you up to these days?
Oh, I'm staying home. I've been home. I've been working from home for the past a little bit longer than 2 weeks. I've been venturing out very little, just to sometimes pick up some food and to, you know, to go to the supermarket. And that's pretty much what I'm doing currently.
Yeah. Well, here in Dallas, in North Texas, the situation, I mean, we obviously have cases and unfortunately we've had some people die, but overall the situation is not critical as it is in New York or L.A. or maybe potentially in New Orleans from what we're hearing. But here in North Texas, I think things are – I mean, we're inside like everybody else. We've been told to do that, and everybody is complying, which is a good thing. But it is really strange when you're in North Texas this time of the year. It's really strange not to have any sports or not to have any outside activities considering how beautiful – the weather is right now. So let's begin with Rosine, ladies first here. And Rosine, I'm not hearing anything coming from France, or any information about the virus in France. And I've heard a few things. I think you've sent me a couple of things. Michael did send me something a while ago. But, you know, you're right next to Spain, which is one of the biggest problems in the world. Italy is far away, of course, but Spain is right next to to France. Barcelona having a lot of problems is not far from France. What are you hearing from France and from Paris, Rosine?
Well, France is a different position than Spain and Italy for a reason that the people cannot be cured, the people cannot even be treated. There is a big fight going on in Paris and all over France. I suppose you heard about what's going on with Professor Didier Raoult from Marseille, who found a possibility to treat that virus. And President Trump jumped on that possibility and allowed the treatment in the United States. But in France, the government did not allow that. People are dying, not only the people that are taking care, doctors and nurses, don't have access to masks or tests. Or now this morning I heard that supplies for anesthesia are running low all over different hospitals in different big cities. It's really a total disaster. We have those doctors, those nurses sick with the virus, they cannot prevent or protect themselves. And the fight, the stupid fight between the government and the professor who has tested the medication that is supposed to working, and it's a very old medication. This Nivaquin, it has been, 60 years old, used against malaria, and it's now okay to treat the virus, yeah. And it's not allowed. The government is preventing now. The reason why is because the minister, the health minister under President Macron, decided a month ago or a month and a half ago to take that medication out of the list of possible medications that you can buy. So, also, she, on January, I think beginning of January, she made a speech and said, oh, don't worry about that. There will not be any danger coming from the virus. Now, her husband is the head of an international, not hospital, but research that was working in Wuhan with the Chinese. In this laboratory where coronavirus escaped, according to what they say, escaped, as a French director too. So it's a work between the French and the Chinese. It's not only the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
The man who is in charge, this Monsieur Levy, who is married with the health minister, Madame Bizin, had a fight with the professor. Now, you know very well, I don't know, maybe you are not aware of, but people that are in research in France are people that are not making any big money, and people that are not looking for fame and put millions of dollars in their pocket like Big Pharma is on an international level. So we are very lucky in the United States that our president took the side of the honest doctor versus the Big Pharma.
Yeah. What?
In France,
yeah.
It's a disaster. In Paris especially, I have my friend from Morocco stuck. They're completely stuck in their apartment. You cannot get out. You have to have a paper, a piece of paper that you print. You sign the time you get out and the time you have to be in. If not, it's 135 euro penalty. And I think if the second time you are caught, the penalty goes up and you can find yourself in jail. This is not prevention. This is martial law.
Yeah.
And the French are letting go their freedom.
Right. Let me ask you, what numbers do you have of cases or unfortunately of people dying? What kind of numbers are you hearing or is that information available?
No, not really, because it's different. Now, in Paris, I will say in Paris, I was told that a lot of people who are dying in the retirement home are not counted as dead. They don't count the people, the older people that die in retirement home. So they just count the people that are dying. And also, I would say, number over maybe 1,500 counted so far dead, but it's by the thousand and the thousand getting sick. But there is
right.
a cure. If the problem, the doctor who found that cure said, very important is to test. You have to do massive testing. Now,
mm-hmm.
you have to be taken at the beginning of the disease. As your first symptom, you have to start the treatment. If you arrive at a hospital and your lungs are already very, very attacked, you don't have the same chance, okay?
Right.
So he insists on massive testing and early cure, early medication given to the patient.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just put some numbers here. I don't know if you two have seen Real Clear Politics as a daily graph. I guess they update it more than daily, but I pick it up every morning and look at it. And these are the different countries in the world. And, for example, France has had 2,300 people dead and 319 the last 24 hours and 37,000 confirmed cases. This is out of Real Clear Politics. I mean, that is not Spain or Italy, but it's a pretty high number compared to, you know, the United States when you look at it on a relative basis. One more question, Rosine, before we go to Michael and we look at New York City. How is the healthcare system in France? Refresh my memory. Is it more of a socialized medicine type system, or is it private, or is it a combination? How is it, please?
Well, in the year 2000, the healthcare in France was number one in the world. It's not, well, you call it socialized medicine, but it's not exactly that. If you are an employee, money is withdrawn from your paycheck. They call it social security, and that would used to cover your hospital, used to cover your doctor. When you go to the doctor fill out a form, you signed it, and the doctor get paid from the government, okay? But with the problem of immigration, with the refugee, all hospital, all, even the doctor office cannot handle such a number of people coming to their office because refugees and immigrants have a free health care. They get there, they are free. So the French, they don't get a good service. A few years ago, you would go to a French hospital, you would be very, very well treated. Not anymore. It started with President Hollande. President Hollande wanted, you cannot blame Macron about that, because Hollande did it. He closed some hospital and he fired some of the people, fired some of the nurses in the hospital, fired some of the helper of the administration, everything. So the minimum, France was operating on a much less health system available to the French people. That's what is happening.
Yeah.
Too many people that have free stuff.
Yes. So I would assume that the healthcare system there is in, maybe not the situation in Spain and Italy, of course, but it's going to come under a great severe test. Before we take a break and we bring Michael in, I would like, Michael, I know that you follow Europe a great deal as well, but did you want to put anything in or add anything to the the information on France before we take a break and go to New York City. So feel free to put some information in, please.
Well, I think that, you know, as Racine just mentioned, the situation is dire in France in itself. As you mentioned, there are about, 38,000 cases. Just 38,000 cases, 2,300 people have died. It's a dire situation. A lot of people have not listened to the government when it comes to staying under quarantine. There are some videos making rounds on the internet, certain neighborhoods which are majority immigrant, in which people are just going wild, attacking the police. There have been, an eruption of violence and crime. So it's a very worrisome situation that we have going on right now in France.
Right. And by the way, thank you for sending me that video, Michael, because it confirmed what my biggest fear is about France. It's, well, obviously the virus, but I just think that with what we've seen in Paris here over the last year or 2 years, with the lawlessness and the people in the streets, it wouldn't take a lot for a lot of those problems to break out in Paris, and that could really complicate the situation, as well as the problem with the virus. Anything you want to add, Racine, to what I just said or Michael said?
I just want to add something about
Please.
The situation of the people. The French people have been, for the past few years, very quiet and very submissive. But with this crisis, plus the immigrant crisis, plus the Gilets Jaunes crisis, I think we are on the verge of a civil war or a civil uprising soon in France, at least in Paris.
Yes. Well, I think that's how I'm thinking too. Racine, because we've seen
mm-hmm.
some interesting situations here just following the news. We're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll talk more about what's happening in New York City with our friends Michael and Racine. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, talking about Corona with our friends Racine and Michael. We're going to be talking about New York City in a minute. We were just talking to Racine about France. I want to repeat what I said before we went on break. There is a great graph, and there's lots of different graphs like this, different services keeping track of the numbers. The one that I've been looking at is realclearpolitics.com, and they have one where they list the countries by the number of cases and so on. And it's, in the case of France, I'll repeat, 37,000 plus, almost 38,000 cases, confirmed cases, and 2,300 people dead. So those are numbers that put France, not like Italy and Spain, but more like the Netherlands, who's also having similar problems, or at least, relatively speaking, similar problems. Well, let's come back to our two friends, Racine and Michael, and let's talk a little bit about New York City, Michael. Today, I'm sure you heard the conversation back and forth about President Trump and the possibility that he would issue a quarantine or he would quarantine sections of New York and New Jersey, and I believe parts of Connecticut too. And we, in fact, I have a post at the American Thinker coming out Sunday morning where I'm talking about the governor of Rhode Island literally using the National Guard and the police to keep people from New York going to Rhode Island, which is, of course, not a far drive. And then there's the whole story of Florida. And now they're pretty angry, too, with people from New York. So it's a very difficult situation in New York. So, Michael, Give us a full report, as they used to say in the military. Just give us a report. Tell us what you're seeing there in New York, Michael.
Absolutely. I don't know if you will mind, before I dive into the data for New York City, just to paint a picture for our listeners so they can understand the context of what's going on here in New York City and in New York State at large.
Please do. Please do.
We currently have worldwide, inclusive of China, which we don't know if, you know, the numbers are accurate or not. Very likely they are not. Very obviously they are not. We have 660,000 cases worldwide since this virus appeared on the face of the earth. 660,000 cases. We have had about 1,000 deaths worldwide. The average of death rate for the virus, of those who have the virus worldwide, the average is 4.6% of the average worldwide. Dr. Fauci told us in the past that, you know, with influenza, about 0.1% of the people die, and that this virus was 10 times more deadly than the common influenza. We were talking about France years now in the past couple of minutes. France has a death rate of 6%. It's extremely high. Italy, it's nearing 10% death rate, meaning 10% of the people who have coronavirus end up dying. Those numbers are very, very high. Here in the U.S., as it stands right now, we have 121,000 cases and about 2,000 deaths. That gives us an average of 1.66% of deaths, 1.66% of the people who have acquired coronavirus have died, which, again, it's, you know, good news, because when this whole situation, this whole pandemic started here in the U.S. about 2-3 weeks ago, we were told that the average death rate in the U.S. will be something up between 3-4%. So those are good news. In terms of deaths, in terms of cases, right now in the U.S., I just mentioned, we have about 121,000 cases. New York State has about 52,000. In New York City alone, we have about 30,000. That's a huge number. When it comes to number of deaths in New York City, we have, as of today, 517 deaths. 517 deaths in New York City, which is, again, the number 8 biggest number of deaths worldwide. We're right behind the Netherlands, which has 639 deaths. And the Netherlands have about double the population of New York City. They have about 17 million people. New York City proper is about 8 million people. So it's a big number for New York City. And the death rate in New York City, it's 1.72%, which is, again, it's in line with the nationwide average that, as you mentioned, 1.66%. It's a terrible number. And again, I'm putting everything into perspective. It's a terrible virus. Some of the scientists have told us that it's between 3-10 times more contagious than regular flu. And I already discussed that rate, you know, it's an average of 1%, but that's what's expected versus the regular flu, which is 0.1%. And going back to New York City, I mentioned already that we're leading the nation, unfortunately, in the number of deaths here in New York City with 517. The closest number in the New York State area will be Suffolk County with 30 deaths. Suffolk County is part of Long Island, which it's considered part of the New York City metro area. So those numbers are extremely high. Where, again, we, to put everything in perspective again, we have about 4%, I'm talking about New York City, we have about 4% of the cases worldwide. That's a huge number only for New York City.
Right.
So we are the epicenter in itself. And in New York City, we have different counties. We call them here boroughs.
Right.
Queens is leading the town with about 9,200 cases. Brooklyn has about 7,800. The Bronx has about 5,400. Manhattan has about 5,000, and Staten Island has about 1,800. I'm sorry, 1,700 cases. That will be the breakdown county by county. So
right.
It's a tough situation. as of, you know, last Sunday, 8 p.m., all non-essential businesses in New York State have been closed. Everybody has, you know, if you can, everybody has to be working from home, non-essential jobs. Everybody has to be working from home. I, myself, as I expressed at the beginning of the phone of this program, I've been working from home for about 2 weeks. Restaurants are open for deliveries only. Supermarkets are open. Convenience stores are open. Laundromats are supposed to be open, but many of them are closed. Liquor stores are open. So it's a very interesting situation. The transit system in New York City, it's operating under what they call essential scheduling, which means they put all the weight of the availability of trains in the peak hours of the morning and peak hours of night to pretty much service essential workers, healthcare workers, police officers, and firefighters who are out there and have to work and have to mobilize. So that's how things have changed here in New York City.
Yeah, just a quick anecdote to both of you. This morning, I went to our local 7-Eleven where I go usually to buy my lottery ticket. And I know the guy who runs the place, who owns the place, is a very nice young man. And I go there just about every day to get my lottery ticket. So when I got there today, there was a big sign on the door that says only 10 people can go in at one time. And you have to be like 6 feet apart from each other. And I don't know, is that happening in your area, Rosine? Do you see that happening in some of the stores?
In all the stores, food stores, for example, I was in Aldi yesterday. It's such an amount of, you have to be 6 feet away. And it's not on the store, but if you go, for example, in a public area like, I will say, a park, you can go to the park. You have to be 6 feet away of the next person. You cannot have more than, you cannot go with somebody. You know what I mean?
I understand.
Yes, it's written in every single food store. You have to respect that. The governor ordered that too for the whole state. It's a whole state. Country or city, you have to respect distancing.
Right. Yeah, that's the new thing now. You know, what do they call it? Safe distance. Michael, I guess they call it safe distance, which is, you know.
I don't know if that's safe, but it is safe distance.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, if you know the person, I guess you can get a little closer. But if it's a stranger, they want you to be at least 6 feet away. I'm not exactly sure how you measure 6 feet, though. That was my
I
mean, I'm sitting there going, okay, how do I, you know, how do I measure 6 feet? You know, it's a little strange, but I guess it's kind of a, you know, it's not an exact distance. It's kind of whatever makes you comfortable. Michael, New York City is, it's not a surprise to me that a city with a large population, a lot of apartment buildings, the subways. So it's not a surprise that that would be a city that could be impacted by let's say a virus like this. But I think, and I don't want to get too political, it's too early for to get political yet, but I think New York City has also been very poorly governed here over the last 10 years or so. And, you know, you go to New York City and everything was chaotic and there didn't seem to be the kind of discipline that you had when Giuliani was the mayor. And, again, I don't want to get political, but I think at some time, at some point, when we get through all of this, we need to have a frank discussion in the country about these issues, you know, that cities have to be well run. You cannot have homeless people in the streets. I mean, we have to have a conversation about this, Michael.
Yes. I mean, like you mentioned, I don't want to get political because I think this is a crisis that, again, because of the misinformation coming from China and the World Health Organization, which is nothing but an instrument, and the lackeys of the Chinese communist regime, we were blindsided, and it really took everybody by surprise. But New York City has been diminishing its quality of life for the past 2 or 3 years in a big way. We have an increasing number of homelessness, homeless people taking over Central Park, taking over Penn Station, Grand Central Station. Crime is rising in big part because of the legislation that the state adopted when it came to bail reform, in which individuals are released for most crimes. And we have had cases of individuals who are released 2 or 3 times in a day, and they commit, you know, the same number of crimes in a day. They are released, they go commit a crime, they get arrested, they are released. It's just unbelievable. And Mayor de Blasio has been very critical of President Trump. He told us last Sunday that the city was, you know, on the verge of collapse, that the president had forsaken his own city because President Trump is a native of Queens, that the army needed to be here. But if we go back a couple of years, we find out, for example, that Mayor de Blasio and his wife, Charlene McRae, have wasted about $1.8 billion of taxpayers' money. Out of those $1.8 million, and all this was found out last year in 2019, about a year ago, February of 2019, there was a program that the First Lady of New York was pushing called Thrive NYC. Again, this Thrive NYC, for those who are listening who like to Google it. It's a program that it was seeking to improve the health, mental health of New Yorkers, especially homeless people, people who were in situations of vulnerability, etc. There was an expenditure of $900 billion, and nobody knew what happened with the money. It just disappeared. The mayor itself had another program called Renewal School Program, that again, in which he spent close to $770 million. Again, nobody knew what happened with the money. And then we learned sometime earlier this week that City Hall didn't order his first shipment of supplies until March 6th. So, everybody's blaming the federal government, but local and state governments didn't have their act together either. And I would like to also point out that we had a health commissioner here that as late as the first week of February, her name is Osiris Barbeau, she was telling that it was okay to go outside, it was okay to ride the subway, that based on the data that they had, the transmission of the coronavirus from person to person was very unlikely and very difficult. There was no need to panic, just to carry on with our lives. Then we had an infamous congresswoman from New York City, Ocasio-Cortez, telling people to go and patronize Asian American businesses throughout the city to stop being racist, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there is plenty of blame to be shared. And there is a lot of contradiction coming from our elected officials. Cuomo, in my opinion, has done a very good job. And de Blasio, again, given the circumstances, he has done, I guess, a decent job, not a terrible job, not a good job either. But I was citing, for instance, the press conference that he gave a week ago on last Sunday, which I listened in its entirety. So again, he started the press conference saying, you know, the situation is dire, federal government has abandoned us, Trump has forsaken us. And then half an hour later, within the same press conference, he was saying it was okay for people to go out and exercise, just to use, you know, good judgment in terms of the time people were going to be outside, that it was okay for parents to take their children to playgrounds and parks, again, just to use common sense as to how long they were going to be there. And, you know, if a crowd started to form, just to go back home. He said that, again, playgrounds were not going to be sanitized or anything, and that police was going to be enforcing the unspoken time rule as to how much people could be outside. Then you had the governor telling us, again, during that same period of time, and today and yesterday, that he wants certain streets closed in Manhattan, Queens, and Brooklyn for people to go out and walk. So which one is it? Is it the end of the world?
Right.
You know what I mean? There is a lot of contradiction, though, speaking. Also, the governor was saying about 2 or 3 days ago that he regretted his decision of shutting down entire the economy in its entirety by telling everybody
right.
to go home. So I think that what we should have done in New York City, in New York State, and to be quite honest, in the entire country, was to isolate those who needed to be isolated, the vulnerable populations, people traveling or coming back from overseas, and enforce it somehow instead of just shutting down the entire economy. Because, yes, even though this is a very, very dangerous virus with a very with a higher rate of mortality and morbidity than the regular flu, we see that percentages of the population who are dying from it are not extremely high. And, again, I feel terribly for those who have died
prematurely
because of this death. Many of them, not all of them, but the vast majority of them had underlying medical conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them were near death anyway. But I think that you need to balance what do you want to do. Do you want to avoid having an economic meltdown that will be even worse than the disease itself? Or for the sake of these numbers and studies that have been released and revised throughout this past week, just confine the entire population of a country to their homes. It's just a very tough decision. And
I'm sorry, go ahead and finish. Forgive me for interrupting you, but go ahead and finish.
I'm saying I'm not blaming any of our leaders. Like,
right.
Because imagine, it's a tight rope,
right.
Balance. You know, it's, again, between ruining the economy and the livelihood of millions of people and preventing a pandemic. It's a very hard question.
It is, and it's a tough call, and probably we'll have to make that call here in the country over the next 2 weeks or so. But I do want to go back and just to add something, and then I'd like both of you to comment on a closing question that I have. But I do want to say I agree with you. I think Governor Cuomo has done a good job. And I think, although I'm not there, it looks like Mayor de Blasio has done a decent job as well. My point for bringing the other stuff up about these cities is that I think our large cities, primarily managed, well, all of them really managed by the Democrat Party, in my opinion, have not been that concerned with, you know, taking care of the cities. They've tolerated too much homelessness for purely political reasons. And I think a lot of that has hurt these cities at a time like this. You cannot have 100,000 people in L.A. living in the streets without proper hygiene and so on, without having potential consequences for medical problems and potentially making a virus worse. So that's that was my whole point. I don't want to get into the politics. It's too early for that. So let's take care of the people. Let's cure the people. That should be the focus right now. But at some point down the road later, I think the voters in those cities are going to have to take a very hard look at some of the politicians that they've elected for the last few years. Let me raise a question here. I want to hear from both of you, and that is, what could be the long-term consequences of this virus? I think, and I want to hear from both of you, Rosine first and then Michael. In my opinion, the two biggest consequences are going to be that all of a sudden everybody's going to realize that it matters a great deal. Your borders matter. It matters who comes into your country and how they come in. So that's going to be number one, and that's going to be a big issue in Europe, I'm sure. And the second is that I think the days of doing business with China are going to be very different than the future. So, Rosine, your comments, or if you want to add anything else to what I just said.
Well, I agree completely with you with the border stuff. We need borders. We need to control the people. And also, you're right. I was so shocked, Sylvia, to hear that all our medication were coming from China, and the two pharmaceutical labs that was providing us with some medication had been closed. We have to reopen those labs. We have to be self-sufficient. The president was really right when he said, we have to do it in America. I don't mean we have to close everything up, but we have to change our view from China. Immigration, the first one, but there is one thing I want to add. for the country when there is a big virus or whatever catastrophe, it's very important to have a leader. We are very lucky with Donald Trump, because if we had another Obama or Hillary Clinton, we would not have been allowed to use the cure that is very cheap, €1, to cure that virus, number one. Number two, France is down the drain. Why? Because there is no leadership. There is really no leadership. So when you don't have a strong leader, you cannot expect your country to flourish. I think we will have a revival in economy after that. I think the market is going to go up and the economy is going to be booming. I think it's just a slow, it's a wake-up call. It's a wake-up call. And when we are finished with that, we will be better than ever. We have to see that on the positive side.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree with you. There are always good things always can come out of something like this. Michael, your thoughts and what I said about borders in China, I know those are two topics that have always been of interest to you.
Yes, absolutely. I just want to mention something very quick about New York City, that complements your last comments on this issue. Again, I mean, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I spoke earlier about the $1.8 billion wasted by the de Blasio administration. As late as of January of this year, there were complaints about how hospital closures and shift in Medicaid were taking a toll on New York City's health infrastructure, overwhelmed hospitals, many of these hospitals running low or out of PPEs, the personal protection equipment, et cetera, et cetera. Right now, there are images on the internet and media of medical professionals here in New York City using garbage bags to protect themselves. And people are decrying the horrible Trump administration and their broken promises. Well, guess what? Medical workers have been doing that here in New York City because of this crisis for the past 2 years. Public hospitals have been running very, very low of equipment and supplies for a long time. There was also talk about how Governor Cuomo, when he first came in office, he refused to buy the number of ventilators and have a strategic stockpile for the state and chose to spend that money on other items. I have not been able to confirm personally this piece of news, but that's something that, it's worth, looking into. Now, regarding the ramifications about the virus, the world is never going to be the same. I think it had changes forever. There are going to be industries that they are not going to come back, no matter how much money the government, both in the United States, in Canada, and in Europe, gives to these industries. That's just the reality. It will change the way we interact with one another. I think that countries are going to become more conscious about their borders. And depending how this, ends up, if it's something that is never going to come back, like SARS or MERS, et cetera, and goes away, I think that people will go back to their old ways when it comes to open borders, right? And financially, there's no coming back. But again, people's mentalities are going to go back because we have the media against us and the establishment politicians against us pushing every turn they can globalism. If this becomes something seasonal, as Dr. Fauci has implied throughout this whole crisis, then for real borders are here to stay and limitations are going to stay,
right?
Because it's going to cause a disruption unlike anything we have ever seen in the world. But most importantly, on the issue of China, when I was very young, I'm talking about when I was a tween,
Michael, you're not even 30 years old. What are you talking about? When I was very young. Give me a break, Michael. I mean, when I was very young. Come on, Michael. Okay, I'll let you get away with it because I like you. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. When I was a kid, I wanted to work at the UN. The European Union, because I thought of this as a very nice, noble, supranational organization. But the reality is that the UN and the World Heritage Organization are very, very, very corrupt entities. We have the case of the head of the World Health Organization, Dr. Tedros, who is a lackey of China. Let's not forget that back in mid-January, the World Health Organization was parroting what China was telling them without verifying it. I'm going to read very quick a tweet that the World Health Organization put out on January 14th of this year. And it says, preliminary investigations conducted by the Chinese authorities have found no clear evidence of human-to-human transmission of the novel coronavirus identified in Wuhan, #Wuhan, #China. Look where we are 2 months later,
mm-hmm.
Okay? This guy, Dr. Tedros, he continues to praise China and its response to the virus. We know that China has been lying to us about this.
Mm-hmm.
This has been exposed by many Taiwanese scientists, has been exposed by other members of the World Health Organization. Part of this situation in which we are now is because a lot of our public elected officials, such as the commissioners of Health Commissioner here in New York City, were repeating what the World Health Organization was putting out and telling us, live your lives, this is not serious, this is not going on. And now we know it was totally the opposite. There is no way that the U.S., with a population of 330 million people, has more cases than China. There is no way. China, they have 1.4 billion people. I know there were welding people into their apartments because that's what they were doing and taking very draconian measures because they are a dictatorship. But even so, it just doesn't square up. So I think that, again, if we recover from this, I think that many companies are really going to start to move and push forward to move their business out of China into other nations. I don't think they're going to bring most of the businesses back to America, maybe strategic things such as drug manufacturing and such, but many of them are going to continue into Vietnam, Cambodia, et cetera.
Right.
But if this disappears as the SARS, the MERS, I think that we are at risk of falling back into this complacency in which multinational companies, many of them who are American companies, think with their pockets and wallets, and they don't care about surrendering, the nations that made them possible, made it possible for them to succeed, used to have a quick and cheap buck.
Well, no, I agree with that. I agree with that. I think that's you're correct. Well, guys, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight on short notice. And Rosine, as always, a delight to hear from you and to stay in touch with you.
Thank
Michael,
you.
The same. And stay safe. I'm sure we'll get through all of this, and maybe sometime later this year we'll have a chance to look back at this terrible situation. But Michael, stay safe. And I got to ask you a quick question, Michael. The president was talking about quarantine. I just heard the governor say that he's not sure that would work. I don't know. We don't have a lot of time, but tell me, would it work if there was a formal quarantine there in New York?
I think so. Listen, right now we have two schools of thought. We have the Mexican / Swedish school of thought. I sent you a video right before the program in which one of the biggest businessmen in Mexico was saying, people live your lives. This is bad, but it's not terrible, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Sweden, surprisingly, is doing the same. And then the rest of the world in which we're taking very stringent measures. I am of the Steve Bannon school of business, in which I think that we need to do, a full lockdown. If we're going to go through this, we cannot do it halfway. We have to do it.
Right.
And the short answer is yes, I totally agree with the president. I think it should be done and enforced, because otherwise the disease is going to continue spreading by those who are escaping New York City and New York State.
No, I agree. And my guess is that 99% of the people in New York agree with you, because they understand that the longer this goes on, the longer that New York City is going to be isolated, and that's going to bring more and more damage to the city of New York. So I'm not exactly sure how they're going to carry it out. That's the kind of detail, I suppose, that they need to work out, whether they're going to be blocking the bridges. I don't know. I'm not sure how they're going to do it, but I think in principle, I agree with both of you. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us. And Rosine, thank you for your time, and Michael, thank you for your time.
You're both great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sylvia.
To both of you.
Thank you. All right, my pleasure.
Bye-bye, and thank you for updating us on two very, very difficult situations, New York City and what's going on there, and, of course, the situation in Paris and France, where I think we're going to be hearing more about France over the next couple of weeks. You know, because of what's happening here, because of what's happening in the United States, all the focus has been on the United States, and I understand that. But Michael mentioned Mexico there for a minute. They're not really crazy in Mexico about what President López Obrador is preaching, that everybody should just go on with their lives. There's a lot of concern down there about that. So, I mean, I'm not sure that we've heard the last of that particular story either. Well, thank you to all of you for listening tonight, this little special podcast that we did on Saturdays. Just to look at the situation in New York and a look at the situation in France. And we'll keep doing some of these updates on the program. On Sunday night, we'll go back to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. And I'm sure we're going to be talking a little bit about New York as well and some of the other general political issues of the day. Thank you and good night, and stay safe wherever you are. Stay safe, please.